The Heaven Field, a novel by I.G. Hume, read by the author. Episode 9, Grace.
I wasn't even that close to Patty, sighed Grace, taking another gulp of wine from her polystyrene cup. She took a long draw on her cigarette and blew a haze of smoke across the desk and into Thomas's face. He coughed violently, then returned his gaze to his untouched cup. Oh, I'm sorry, Tom, she drawled, and stubbed the barely touched cigarette out straight onto her desk. She put her head on her hand and looked long at him. You remind me of my son, she said quietly, and just caught herself in time as her head rolled off her hand. Her voice was slurring now. She had consumed one whole bottle and nearly finished the second. He was as awkward as you, she giggled. Thomas looked up, embarrassed. Do you see him often? I mean, you're so busy here, what does he...
He's dead, she said flatly, and poured the rest of her wine into her cup, spilling most of it.
I haven't seen him for so long, she sighed. I wonder if I'll ever be unable to picture his face.
She paused a second, staring into space.
You know, I never used to believe in God, she continued, taking out another cigarette and lighting it up. Funny, isn't it? All these years of work, trying to unlock the secrets of creation, to categorize and label everything. I had faith in science. I thought that eventually we'd walk straight up to God, shake him by the hand, and show him conclusive proof that he didn't exist.
A laugh degenerated into a hacking cough.
And then it all changed.
In one telephone call, everything changed.
He's dead.
Suddenly none of it made sense. We were just scrabbling about in the dirt, playing games, not daring to ask any of the real questions. Always turning to Thesian hypothesis. Oops. She giggled and almost tumbled off her chair.
I'm sorry, Thomas. Yes. Always turning to Thesian hypothesis. Then, bang.
She thumped her hand on the table, making Thomas and his cup jump.
Believe me, Thomas, she said. The real questions come and find you.
So, why are you here, working on Standing Point? Whispered Thomas.
What? The field? Well, I suppose it just seems such a direct line of questioning.
A physical discovery?
I don't know. The first time we travelled through, just felt like he was an answer to one of those big questions, just waiting to be found.
So, all this,
Thomas heard himself saying without being able to stop.
You're just searching for some meaning to put to your son's death.
Grace stared acidly at him, then stubbed out her cigarette.
You really need to work on those social skills a little more, Thomas, she snapped, and rose unsteadily, knocking over her cup.
Oh, fuck, she cursed.
I'm sorry, blurted out Thomas. I didn't mean it to come out like that. I don't want to offend you.
Grace looked down at Thomas in the hazy light of the desk lamp. He looked like a puppy that had just received a telling off. She swayed unsteadily for a moment, then slumped back down in her chair.
No, I suppose you're right, she sighed bleakly, and wiped her eyes on her sleeve.
You shouldn't be sad, whispered Thomas.
No,
she said, instantly brightening up again. Thomas was having trouble coping with their crazy mood swings.
You're all right, Tom, she said, slurring badly now.
Her eyes tried to focus as she pointed a shaky finger towards him.
But why shouldn't I be sad? What's wrong with being sad? You know, happiness is fickle. It's all fleeting, always contained in the moment. You're always too drunk on it to savour happiness, she hiccuped.
As her head lolled forward onto the desk, she continued, getting ever quieter.
Sorrow, Thomas. Sorrow is the only constant. It never leaves your side. Make a true friend of sorrow, she laughed quietly. Then you'll always be happy.
Thomas left her snoring and went in search of someone who might help. He came across Sanders, who was sitting in the medical room. He was talking to one of the paramedics who was packing up for the end of his shift.
Hello, Sanders. It's Grace. She's in her office.
I didn't know what I should do. She's asleep, I think.
Hi, Thomas, he said wearily. He said his goodbyes to the medic and followed Thomas down the corridor. Has she had one of her blowouts again? He asked, as they approached Grace's office. They walked in and he called out cheerfully. Hi, Grace. Have you been partying without me again? He smiled as he lifted her limp, snoring form from where she lay, slumped over the desk. She stirred and mumbled a handful of swear words at him, tried to fight him off, then settled back to sleep as he carried her lightly to the conference room. We usually just leave her in here, he said, laying her down on an old sofa at one end of the room. Leave her a glass of water. She'll be fine in the morning. She'll be back at work before any of us. He smiled and covered her with her coat. Thomas thought he had caught a hint of sadness in Sander's voice. I'll clean her office up. You get going. You look knackered, said Sanders, and strode back down the hall, leaving Thomas gazing down on Grace where she slept. He stood there for a long while. She looked peaceful. Occasionally she would smile and mutter something under her breath. Thomas left the room and turned the lights out, wiping his eyes as he made his way back to his quarters.
Morning, Thomas, smiled Grace, as she walked towards him down the corridor.
Hello, Doctor, Miss Grace, he stammered.
He was on his way from the canteen to control, carrying a stack of coffee beakers for the start of the early shift.
Are you feeling well?
He inquired.
Of course. Why shouldn't I? She asked, without batting an eyelid.
I saw Sanders last night. He...
Is he still following you around like a lost puppy? Laughed Grace.
Thomas tried to picture the powerful bulk of Sanders as a puppy. The analogy just didn't seem to fit.
Mostly, he's always somewhere nearby.
He glanced around as if he expected Sanders to appear by magic.
Do you know why he has to protect me? And who from?
Protect you, laughed Grace. I just thought that upstairs didn't trust you. I think they're protecting us from you.
Thomas looked shocked at this new revelation.
But, he mumbled, why am I here then?
It's okay, Thomas. Nobody trusts anybody else at the moment anyway.
Oh, for Christ's sakes.
She looked over Thomas's shoulder and sighed. He turned to follow her gaze and saw Colin James, the base's military commander, striding up to them.
Ah, Grace, and Mr. Sullivan, just the two I was looking for.
He had a warm smile, but he seemed more haggard than when Thomas had last seen him.
It's not often we see you down here, Colin, said Grace, then added, this won't take long, will it?
Good to see you too, smiled James. Well, that all depends on how our latest team member is coming on.
He looked down at Thomas, who was still struggling with his stack of hot coffees. James raised one eyebrow.
How are you fitting in, Mr. Sullivan?
Thomas looked from James to Grace and back again.
I haven't really... That is, I'm,
We just haven't had time to fix Thomas up with anything specific yet, broke in Grace.
He's been keeping busy, though, this and that, haven't you, Thomas?
The commander's face dropped, then a flash of anger passed across it.
Grace, don't do this to me. I can suffer your constant insubordination, but downright sloppiness will not be tolerated. Have you read the reports on Mr. Sullivan that I sent you?
His face was grim and he stared hard at Grace.
Thomas wondered what the reports were, as he tried to move the steaming coffees from one hand to the other as they burned his fingers.
You know, I just haven't had the time, Colin. You of all people know what it's been like over the past couple of weeks, mumbled Grace.
Let us go to your office and discuss this there, shall we? Said Colin coolly. Thomas, would you join us, please?
Yes, it's just... I've got the coffees for the technicians, then the array engineers in B section.
He trailed off under the bemused gaze of the commander. James turned to Grace for an explanation.
I told you, we just haven't had a job for him, she muttered, staring at her shoes.
You've had Mr. Sullivan acting as T-boy for the past week, breathed James, a look of incredulity on his face.
Your office now, he snapped.
And the coffees? Stuttered Thomas.
James let out an exasperated cry.
You there! He roared at a passing technician, who nearly jumped out of his skin. The gawky youth turned pale at the sight of the huge man. Take these, he snapped, and snatching the beakers from Thomas, he piled them onto the unfortunate man.
What shall I do with them? Asked the youth nervously.
Drink them for all I care, barked James, and strode off down the corridor, Grace and Thomas trotting along behind. The shouting subsided after a couple of minutes, and soon, from where he waited outside Grace's office, Thomas could only hear the low murmur of a more subdued conversation. Eventually the door opened, and Grace, looking slightly embarrassed, asked Thomas to join them. Commander James sat in the old armchair in one corner of the room. Grace showed Thomas to the seat he had occupied the previous evening, when he had been her inadequate drinking partner.
I must apologise, began Grace. I simply didn't have any idea, that is, nobody informed me quite how recommended you were.
She shot an apologetic look towards James.
We'll get you set up as soon as we can with some sort of proper placement.
She drifted off into an awkward silence. Thomas looked around in confusion.
I don't understand, he whispered. Recommended by whom?
I'm sorry, Mr. Sullivan, said James, standing up and pacing the room. He towered over Thomas, who had to strain his neck to look up at him. Grace fumbled around in her drawer for a cigarette.
It seems that nobody has explained your situation clearly at all, have they?
Thomas shook his head slowly. James gave a long sigh and began.
You are aware of the doctors Jonathan Cook and Edmund Keeler. They were formerly, along with Grace here, our leading lights in the field of standing point research.
During the time in which Dr. Palmer was under suspension, he paused, flashing her a provocative glance.
Keeler and Cook came to me in a very excited state. It seemed they had acquired a copy of a thesis by a brilliant young student, which, they said, may revolutionise our perception of how we manipulate and even understand the standing point field. That student, of course, was you, Mr. Sullivan.
But it's never been published. It's not even finished, whispered Thomas.
We kept an eye on you, continued James, ignoring Thomas's interruption, and were exceptionally pleased when you yourself approached us for employment several months ago. We accepted your services readily and awaited your joining our team.
He paused for a while, looking down at Thomas, gauging his reaction. Grace sat back in her chair with her cigarette, grinning at him. Thomas, mouth open, tried to take it all in. His mind swam.
Now, as you may know, continued James, an accident at Hyden Hill occurred after you came to us for your job interview. Keeler, Cook, and a lot of others were lost, and Grace was drafted back in to run Maundsworth. It seems that a clerical error, he pronounced the words with a heavy dose of sarcasm, was to blame for you not receiving your job offer on time, and for Dr. Palmer not realising your credentials. Once again, we are very sorry for our mistake.
But why did you bring me here that night of the rescue? Stammered Thomas, trying to piece it all together. You said you needed my help.
Ah, yes, said James slowly. He looked a little embarrassed. We knew that there were many threats to people and places attached to Standing Point. I had received news that Professor Lambert had been assassinated, and that there may be a threat upon our base here via Patricia Harvey. I considered you, and others, may also be a target, so I brought you in for your own protection.
He paused for a second, then proceeded in an embarrassed tone.
I'm afraid I may have been guilty of more than a little melodrama. I will be the first to admit that I'm not a scientist, and I was foolish and a touch naive. I thought you may be able to help in some way with the rescue.
Grace flashed him a smile and drawled, He did help. He made the tease. Gutteridge stood impassively by the side of the empty chair, as Spears studiously ignored him.
Please, sit, said the gaunt-faced man at last, and Gutteridge squeezed his wide frame uncomfortably into the small chair. I take it you were successful? Asked Spears in his cold, threatening tone.
you managed to deliver the information.
Gutteridge nodded slowly. He gave off an almost distracted feeling of calm.
And you are sure she is reliable? Continued Spears impatiently.
We have leverage on her, replied the squat man absent-mindedly. She should have no problems gaining access.
Good, good, whispers Spears. So, when can we notify the authorities?
She should be able to load the virus program in the downtime, either tonight or late tomorrow, said Gutteridge, calmly surveying the rest of Spears's plush office. The data will be on their systems no later than the following morning.
And all the records have been altered on the plane crash investigators' systems.
Pretty much. We're just finishing that off now, replied Gutteridge. But by tomorrow, it will all point to Monsworth.
Excellent, sighed Spears, with his lizard-like smile. You've done a good job, Carl. More rests on this than you know. All this makes the space race look like a cakewalk.
Is the work on our own arrays progressing well, sir? Asked Gutteridge.
Adequate, adequate, Spears replied. You'll get your chance to be one of the first Americans to set foot in the field, Carl. You're going to be a hero.
Thank you, sir, replied Gutteridge, sounding thoroughly unconvinced.
Thomas found himself outside Grace's office, his arms full of papers. These will do to get you up to speed on our little project, Grace said with a smile, as she loaded him up with yet more folders and files. These are the notes and transcripts of all the Standing Point experiments since the early days of Hyden Hill. Once you've got a feel for it, I'll sort you a password and login, and you can browse the actual data and results down in the library. Thomas staggered off towards his room, feeling, if anything, more confused than before. Grace watched him go.
Cook and Keeler were really that excited about his work? She asked.
James looked up from his thoughts.
Seems he's very talented. But read it for yourself. See what you think.
Then he added with a self-deprecating smile. You're the expert.
We need you for a rescue mission, growled Grace in mock seriousness.
Jesus, Colin. I think you've been reading too much pulp fiction. She threw her head back and laughed. The poor lad must have wet himself.
all right, chuckled Colin. Like I said, guilty of a little melodrama.
The laughter died away to silence. How are the team looking? Asked James after a while. Grace fiddled with a pencil on her desk.
I've just had no idea what they could have gone through.
It could have been any of us, she trailed off.
Well, you were there, Grace. I read your reports. They seem to corroborate what the team saw. I just can't get a handle on any of it. Do you think any of it was real?
Grace shuddered as she remembered asking the same question of Saul.
I don't think there was much to corroborate their stories, said Grace eventually. I just saw a lot of dust.
We didn't see anything until we managed to track the team down, and the storm was starting to die down by then anyway.
But Burns, he saw something. It could have been the creature that Starling described.
Burns got jumpy, started shooting at shadows, almost lost his hand as a result. He was damn sloppy.
How's he doing, by the way?
Fine, replied James. The doctors say he'll keep three of his fingers. But he swears he didn't open fire. He claims the gun just went off on its own.
But he said you all heard the same cry, said James.
Grace looked at him tight-lipped. The colour seemed to drain from her face.
I heard a pretty scary sound, yes, she sighed. Hell, we were in the middle of a howling gale. It was probably just the wind and our nerves. I would rather be asking the question of where our paradise went to and why.
Starling seemed to think Patty somehow triggered it when she removed her helmet, said James somberly.
We just need to get back in and do some tests, said Grace hopefully.
James laughed grimly. I think things will be on hold for a little longer yet, Grace.
Any news of the investigation on Patty? Asked Grace.
James shrugged and held his arms up.
Oh, come on, Colin, sighed Grace. Let me in on it. I need to know what happened out there in the field.
I can help you if only you'd let me. I know that, Grace. I know. And I would love to be able to ask for your help at the moment, but, well, this goes really high up. Really high up. I'm just a little man in all of this. I do not know half of what is going on, said Colin with a sigh. But you saw Patty. You must have been in on the autopsy. All I hear is rumours. Grace, please, just give me some more time. Sort Mr. Sullivan out and I will try and ask a few questions. See if I can get a timescale on the investigations. Thanks, Colin, said Grace quietly. I just need to know. Patty and all that. We'll find out what happened. Don't worry. Colin stood and placed his large hand on Grace's shoulder. He turned and strode out of the door, leaving Grace alone at her desk, staring at a thick dossier marked Thomas Sullivan, classified. Grace wondered whether she should put off reading it for a while. She really needed the structural analysis report from the subsystem work. She stood up and grabbed her coat, then stopped and looked down at the large file. Oh, I may as well get it over with, she sighed to herself, and sat back down again. She lit a cigarette and turned to the first page. Thomas dumped the pile of papers onto the small work table in the corner of the room. John and Darren, his hideous roommates, had only just started their shifts an hour ago, so he would be mercifully free from their company for the next 7 or 8 hours. John Dale worked somewhere down in one of the dismal conduit systems, deep in the bowels of the array. Thomas couldn't imagine just what work the man could be capable of performing. He was hugely fat and sweated constantly. Thomas, who kept out of the room as much as possible, would usually find Dale sat on the edge of his bunk, wearing only his dirty underwear, gulping down a beer. "Hey, Daz! Here's the tea lady," would be the usual greeting Thomas would receive. "Leave him alone, you cheeky twat," would come from the bunk below. "You're all right there, Thomas. Don't take no offence to this sudden puff. He's just trying to chat you up." Darren, or Daz as everyone called him, would cackle away at his own jokes until his laughter degenerated into a ferocious smoker's hack. He was unkempt, with long, dark, greasy hair and an unhealthy complexion. Although he was less aggressive than John Dale, Thomas liked Daz no better, as the horrible man would always try to enter into some inane conversation, a situation Thomas found terrifying. Daz worked in the canteen somewhere, which, upon being privy to his personal habits, put Thomas off eating much at all. The two men would usually carry on their dull bickering, and Thomas would nervously skirt them, finding relative sanctuary in his low bed. He would manage to get a few hours' sleep, dozing off through sheer exhaustion, after listening with mounting frustration to their cacophonous snores. He had tried sleeping in the conference room once, but the cleaners came in at 4 in the morning for a tea break, forcing him to leave. Only Grace had the privilege of the conference room sofa. If it wasn't for the inane jobs he had to perform, Thomas would have quite happily switched to a nocturnal existence to escape all the disturbance. Down here, underground, it would have been easier than normal. Whenever he was working on something at the university, he would quite happily work through the night and sleep all day. But now Thomas's routine was one of running messages, fetching drinks or picking up laundry. And all the while his mind raced with possibilities. He was in the leading area of Standing Point research. He knew more about the subject than most of the people here, but he wasn't allowed anywhere near it. There were odd mutterings about the events that had taken place in the Heavenfield, although only Grace had access to any of the expedition team, and only she knew the truth behind the rumours that circulated throughout the base. But if anyone had thought to ask, they would have found that Thomas actually knew more about the expedition team than most. A few days after the rescue, Thomas had been given the task of picking up Jane Honeyman's laundry. She was using the facility's laundrette on the surface, so Thomas had the opportunity to see sunlight for the first time in almost a week. Sanders was on duty as his escort, and showed him the way up through the labyrinth of corridors, and also how to use his ID at the security stations. Thomas liked Sanders the most out of all the men assigned to show him around. None of his guards seemed to know why they still had to look after this gawky young man, and all except Sanders resented it. They all seemed coarse and aggressive, and found amusement in Thomas's predicament. Fortunately, most of them ignored their duties and just left him to his own devices.
but Sanders was a gentle giant in comparison. He shadowed Thomas most of the time, and although he never really spoke much, he was always polite when he did. He stood a full head taller than Thomas, and walked with a quiet grace, his easy movements fluid compared to Thomas's awkward gait. Thomas picked up the laundry from the low prefab building on the edge of the base. The whole place reminded him of his college campus, a clutter of squat concrete buildings in the middle of nowhere. High fences surrounded the site, but beyond them Thomas could see the rough, bleak moorland dark with heather. The sky was overcast and ominous, and a chill wind cut through him. On the way back to the underground entrance, Sanders stopped outside another of the large, grey buildings.
"Thomas, would you mind if we visited a friend of mine while we're here?" he asked quietly.
Thomas mumbled that he didn't mind at all. He relished the idea of staying above ground for a little while longer. Sanders led him through the doors, where they were confronted by two armed and uniformed security guards.
"Hello, John," said Sanders to one of the men. "I don't suppose there's any chance I can get to visit Dave, is there?"
"Oh, you know they can't let you in, Sanders. They've got everything in here pretty much locked down," grunted one of the guards.
"Come on, John. He's my partner," said Sanders quietly.
John sighed and pondered a while, then looked at the other guard, who shrugged and nodded his head a little.
"Okay, but just for a while, and don't get caught or we're all in the shit. Who's he?"
The guard looked suspiciously at Thomas and his armful of laundry bags.
"He's with me," said Sanders.
"He'll have to wait outside," he said, nodding out through the doors to where it had just started raining.
"Oh, come on, John, it's pouring down," sighed Sanders.
"Oh, all right, but he doesn't get to see Burns, okay? Only you. Leave him outside the room."
He turned to Thomas and looked down at him suspiciously.
"And keep out of the way, okay?"
"Okay,"
whispered Thomas nervously, and trotted off in the direction of the lift, making sure to keep close to Sanders.
"Thanks for this," said Sanders, once they were in the lift. "I haven't seen Dave since he came back from the field. This is the first time I've been topside."
"Is that the Burns, the man you were with, well, when you picked me up that night?" stammered Thomas.
"Yeah, he got injured later that same night. I just wanted to see how he was doing."
The lift doors opened, and Sanders walked quietly down the white hospital corridor, searching for the right room. Eventually he found it, and paused at the door.
"Shall I wait here?" asked Thomas.
"You better had, thanks. I won't be long."
Sanders entered the room and closed the door, leaving Thomas alone in the corridor. He spied an empty day room at the end of the hall, and went and sat down in one of the seats facing out of the windows. The rain swept against the glass, and Thomas could only just make out the dark outline of the moors, silhouetted against the sky.
"Beautiful, isn't it?"
came a quiet voice from behind him. Thomas jumped and span around.
I'm just waiting here," he stuttered.
"We're all just waiting,"
sighed the man quietly, and sat down in the chair next to Thomas. The man was obviously a patient, wearing white pyjamas with a dressing gown over the top. He had dark, greying hair and a rough beard. He stared, unblinking, for a long while out of the window. Thomas nervously viewed the back of his hands. The man turned to Thomas, looking into him with his penetrating grey eyes.
"Do you believe in reality?"
he asked.
I'm sorry," whispered Thomas. "I've seen reality, and believe me, this doesn't come close."
The man laughed bitterly to himself.
Are you one of the men from the expedition?" asked Thomas nervously, looking around to make sure nobody else was in sight. "The expedition," whispered the man to himself, heavy with sorrow. "Are you another ghost come to haunt me?"
he asked, his eyes filling with tears. Thomas felt a surge of pity for the man, and wondered what could have reduced him to this.
"No, I'm not a ghost. I'm not supposed to be here. In fact, I don't know why I'm here at all," sighed Thomas. "You're a good spirit," said the man gently, and placed a reassuring hand on Thomas's arm. "You're not tormented by the same fearful things I see in most others here. And in myself. The world has changed forever. We have opened the door to something which we don't understand, and that door cannot be closed. I only hope we can change with the world."
The man had a fevered stare, and Thomas found himself mesmerized by his words, obscure as they were. The man suddenly stiffened, as if hearing a distant noise, then leaned close to Thomas once more.
"They're coming," he whispered.
Thomas jumped around in his chair as if he expected to see somebody creeping up on him, but there was only the empty corridor.
"Where does the field lead to?" asked Thomas nervously. "What's on the other side?"
But the man didn't seem to hear him. He was staring at the rain on the window pane.
"They're coming," he whispered again to himself.
A door slammed and Thomas span around as he heard the sound of rushing feet heading down the corridor towards him.
"Saul!"
came an urgent yell. A large nurse was huffing her way down the corridor.
"Saul, I've been looking all over for you. You shouldn't have... Who are you?"
She stopped as she spotted Thomas and his pile of laundry bags.
I'm just waiting for... It's just, well, I've got this laundry and...
"You have no right to be here," she shouted.
"Who are you? You're in serious..."
"It's all right. He's with me."
It was the calm voice of Saunders. He'd followed her down the corridor.
"Just who are you?" she asked, eyeing him suspiciously, her hands on her hips.
Saunders held up his ID card. The nurse scrutinized it.
"I don't care who you are," she said at last. "You shouldn't be disturbing my patients. Now I want you out of here right this minute or I'm calling security."
Saunders apologized to the nurse and turned to go. Thomas stood up to follow him. He felt the patient's hand on his arm. The man looked up at him with sorrowful eyes.
"It leads to heaven and hell," he said quietly.
You have been listening to The Heaven Field. For more information, downloads, and artwork, visit theheavenfield.com.